Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
What is up, Super Ninfriendos? It is I, Seth Macy, your temporary guest host for this week's episode of Nintendo Voice Chat. I am joined by Brian Altano.
Hey, what's up?
Rebecca Valentine.
Seth, I love being on with you because I just know the second you open the podcast with Super Ninfriendos, a bunch of people in the YouTube comments are going to get really happy.
Yeah,
I'm excited for them. And live from the improv, we have Pear.
It is I, too. What a coincidence. Thanks for having me, Seth.
Thanks for joining me on this episode. We are going to be talking about indies, more indies, some Axiom Verge 2, Metroidvanias, Genesis P-Cross, and of course, wait, I already said Metroidvanias, but let's talk about some indie games. As you all know,
I'm sorry, Nintendo. Did you say P-Cross?
P-Cross. Did I say it like that?
Isn't it like P-Cross? Like
P-Cross.
Like a picture.
It definitely comes from pick, not P.
Yeah, it's not P.
Yeah, P.
So, okay, you guys are telling me when you point your camera at something, you don't take a picture?
No, he's
okay. I mean, okay,
it's that kind of show, huh?
It's going to be that kind of show. Yeah. I can't believe I mispronounced Picross. Why can't I say it? Picross.
Did you guys ever use Picto Chat on Nintendo DS? That was really fun to send messages to friends.
You know what's
like in the same room.
You're joking, but until you said it out loud, I never realized that that's how I said it every time.
Okay. Well, you live in Maine. You don't get to talk to a lot of people in person. I mean, none of us do anymore, but you have a, you know, 40-year head start on that.
A sea has many secrets, and we whisper to one another.
Genesis Picross.
There we go. Sorry for derailing.
No, please. It's a light week in Nintendo land, so like any derailment is more than welcome. And also, people have come to expect absolute chaos because I don't know what I'm doing, and I still can't believe when you're Casey asked me, I'm like, this is a silly goof that Casey's pulling on me. Everyone's watching from the back. Just like we all watched the Nintendo Indie World Showcase yesterday. Let's go.
He's killing it. I'm doing it.
I'm out here. I'm out here in these streets. Nintendo Switch is getting more indie games. What a huge surprise. But I'm okay with that. I don't know about the rest of you, but I think Nintendo is like the best place to play indie games. And there are a couple that were announced yesterday that I'm very, very excited about. But first, we'll go with Axiom Verge 2. Came out yesterday, right after the announcement. We reviewed it. We gave it a 7, which is a good on the IGN scale. Personally, I am a big fan of games that score 7. I don't know why, but I feel like that is the sweet spot of being a little bit niche. I'm either going to love this game way more than the reviewer, or I'm going to hate it way more than the reviewer, if that makes any sense. Oh, I love this little part that's on the screen. You have to be watching the video. Sorry, listeners. Sorry, majority of you. Is anybody playing Axiom Verge 2?
Yes.
Yes. What do you think? And how far into it are you?
Not that far yet. I played the first one as well. I enjoyed the first one, but I'm not a huge fan of the first one. Mm. I'm a big Metroidvania fan. I loved, you know, but it felt a little bit like going back to an earlier Metroid game rather than having, you know, something that would follow the great GBA or Super NES, Metroid. Mm-hmm. But this one, it's interesting. Like they, you know, it's almost like a do-over. It's not a direct sequel, right? Like you have a different character. You're starting with this melee combat, and then it has this really cool kind of dual, like light world, dark world setup. I'm enjoying it so far. We'll see where it goes. You know, our reviewer pointed out some things about, you know, maybe it being a bit easy overall. And so maybe the boss battles and all of that aren't that rewarding in the long run, but we'll see. We'll get there.
Yeah, I'm having some troubles, actually. I thought it was a little harder than I was expecting, but I'm also only about 2 hours in, so I don't have very many powers yet. So
you don't have to fight any of the bosses, do you?
What?
Yeah.
You can skip them?
Oh, why would anyone do? Why would you do that?
That's what I know about it. That's the one fact I know about Axiom Verge 2. I'm curious, how do you feel? What is it like?
That's the coward's way out.
Oh, jeez, come on.
We're not doing that.
Well, I mean, I think the intention was for it to be a bit more of an accessibility thing, because a lot of people really enjoyed the platforming and the exploration and the puzzling, but they were struggling on the boss fights, and so they weren't able to complete the game, it sounded like. And so this was a sort of compromise that they came to.
I feel like a better accessibility option would have been like, you can just walk in the room, punch them in the face once, and they die and explode instantly. Like that would have been
just have like a button.
Yeah, then at least you get the gratification of watching a boss blow up. I haven't started this yet. I'm very excited to. I'm with you in that the first one was like, I liked it but didn't totally love it. It was a little too Metroid NES for me, and I think I went in thinking it would be a little more Super Metroid, but I really dig it. Yeah. It's incredibly ambitious. Like I believe it's entirely made by one person, like every part of it, which is just it makes me feel like I'm doing nothing with my life.
Oh yeah.
that's incredible. And so yeah, I'm excited for this. It feels like this one has some sort of Master Blaster elements to it.
Yes.
Like popping out as like a, which apparently they just launched the third Master Blaster game recently for Switch.
Yep.
People keep buying those games. I would love to. I had no idea it was even coming out. Like whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
We can talk about that another time. But yeah, yeah. I'm very excited to try this game. That was probably one of my favorite announcements from yesterday.
Yeah.
You said about the style for Axiom Verge. Yeah, Tom Happ is the developer who I don't know if he did everything in the second one single-handedly, but yeah, he built the entire first game, and like it is an 8-bit style, but it's not confined by, you know, what by the 8-bit capabilities. Like if you're watching the footage here, right? Like the pixel resolution, everything looks more like 8-bit, but it obviously uses more colors, more effects. It's got the kind of Mode 70 effects on all the big like boss worms and the helicopter and all of that. So it's there's some really cool looking moments with like effects work, and then it's got all these glitches, just like the first game that mess with the screen. And you know, we talked about this. There's this dual setup with a
glitches,
with a little robot. Yeah, yep. Not bugs. Actual real fake glitches.
Those classic real fake glitches. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I was actually playing it a minute before we got here, and then I died. And I thought, well, this game is a little bit harder than I was expecting. But like I said, I'm only like 2 hours in. I don't have very many powers. I did just get my little robot friend there who can move around Blaster Master style. And I love the style of this. There's a glitch right there if you're watching on the video. I love that kind of sort of digital artifacting. Yeah, mm-hmm. This game, I'm almost certain I'm going to see this through to the end, which is rare because I very rarely do that anymore.
Yeah, and it has save spots, obviously, but when you die, you know, there's autosaves. So when you die and you just got a new power, you still have that power, like when you respawn. So it's not like brutal, like old kind of NES games where you have to retrace everything. Like it definitely is a bit more accessible.
Yeah, the save points are pretty generous also. Like they're all over the place, and they refill your health, which is awesome. The only complaint that I have is that when I do die, it takes like 3 seconds to start playing again. And I'm like, come on.
That's it? Three seconds?
Three whole seconds?
Wow. Might as well be 3 whole years when you're as excited to play as I am.
I was reading the game is eventually coming to PS5. And the one of the things they were talking about was that it'll have faster loading times. And I read that sentence and I was just kind of like, but it's like a old school pixel art game. Like how bad could the loading times be? But I guess, you know, 3 seconds, that's kind of a big deal in 2021. But we'll spend 20 seconds talking about it. 3 seconds.
That's enough time to open your Twitter app and think about scrolling through it.
Ooh, yeah.
There you go.
Yikes. Yeah, I agree that we should get rid of loading times entirely.
By the way, I really dig the music in the game. Yeah. I don't know if you, the music is really nice. And what's funny is like when you start playing it, you expect it to be like Metroid where, you know, instantly you've got projectiles, but then it's more like Zelda. It's like close combat slashes. And the first item I think you get is the boomerang, right? Like it's definitely kind of a cool mashup of Zelda and Metroidvania, side scrolling, obviously.
Yeah.
So Zelda 2, there you go. Zelda 2. Oh, people are not going to like that.
I love Zelda 2.
Me too. I'm a weirdo, but I love that game.
I beat it once. I only beat it on Virtual Console with save states, and I will never play it again. But man, I loved everything that Zelda 2 tried to do. It didn't necessarily succeed, but that's Axiom Verge 2. It's out right now. If you're into this genre, I highly recommend picking it up. I just love like the atmosphere and the graphics, and I'm in love with it. I've only had it for a little while. But also announced yesterday, coming to Nintendo Switch this October, which is my birthday, by the way. Hint, hint, folks. Tetris Effect Connected is coming to the Nintendo Switch. I have it on PSVR. That is an incredible way to experience this game. However, my PSVR is packed up now because I don't want to play with it anymore. But if you can get this game, in any capacity, I highly recommend it. It's got crossplay, so you can Tetris Effect your buddies or your enemies, depending on, you know, what mood you're in that day. It also comes out on the same day as the SWOLED, so it's going to look... I mean, this is a beautiful game. It just absolutely... Even on the low-resolution PSVR screen, it looks amazing. So I think on the SWOLED, it's going to look just chef kiss. Who else?
Fireworks, right? Like it's if you haven't played Tetris Effect, it's not like the old kind of limited color palette. It's just like Geometry Wars style kind of explosions.
That's a great way to
particle effect.
I feel like it's sort of a kitbashing between vintage Tetris and something like Lumines or Lumines, however you say that name.
Lumines,
In that, like, the longer you play, the more the sort of aesthetics change and shift, and the music kind of goes to the background and stuff like that. And weirdly, they did some stuff recently where they added a bunch of like the sort of classic Game Boy modes, which is really cool. So there are ways to play this game in like the old school puke green. They're like specific levels or skins. Yeah, this is one of the Xbox Series launch games ish, sort of, even though it wasn't like exclusive or anything. But I bought like the LG CX OLED television.
Oh, man.
And it just looks so good on an OLED. So if you're getting the Switch OLED and you want like a sort of like flashy launch game to play, and you love Tetris, which you should, because it's one of the best games of all time.
Yeah.
Definitely get this. It's awesome.
Yeah. I don't have a PSVR. I don't think I realized this one was on Xbox as well. I'm watching this trailer. This looks so soothing. I tried to play Tetris. I'm a very chill Tetris player. I cannot play it seriously or competitively. I tried to play Tetris 99 and you can like send pieces to people and it just stressed me out because people kept sending me things and freaked me out. I didn't like it. But looking at this, like this is vibes. This is so nice. I might pick this up. I don't know if I'm going to get the OLED, but it's beautiful.
Get the little Patronus to come out and protect you there.
I want to be protected by a little Tetris a little ghost whale.
By the way, I totally forgot about this game because I'm in the same boat as Seth. Like, I haven't turned on my PSVR in so long, and you know, because I have an Oculus Quest 2 now and all that, and totally forgot it's been sitting there waiting for more playtime.
Well, if you you can send a couple of letters to Sony and they'll mail you various dongles and parts over the course of the next 6 weeks that will allow you to play it on your next gen console.
I did get that one, but mine is the V1, the first generation PSVR. Same. So if you do video pass through, it actually limits the output signal that gets passed to your television and everything looks worse. So
yes,
not, very not gonna do that.
It's actually it's easier to use Labo VR than it is to use that. No. This game is awesome. Rebecca, I'm totally with you. We're like, I'm one of those people. I've been playing Tetris my whole life. But then, like, if you ever watch like high level competitive Tetris stuff, it feels like when you go to like a foreign country and you only know three words, but you can get by.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, bonjour. And then people, like, other people get off the plane with you and they're very clearly American, but they're speaking fluent French. That's how I feel watching those things. Because I was like, I didn't know you could do any of that. I had no idea. I was always just like, dun, 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 dun. Like, the lines go down. I'm like, yeah, it did it.
Yay.
It's a good time.
Have you ever seen that video of the guy playing the master Tetris and he gets the high score and when it's invisible and instantaneous? It's like a game's done quick clip. Yeah, they're
actually, I think I saw, if it's game's up quick, I saw that live.
It's just unbelievable. I'm just happy when I get a Tetris. I'm like, four of them. Yeah, that's the most you can get.
It's a lot of work to do that, you know.
It really is. Also, the Tengen or Tengen, once again we have a pronunciation difficulty.
Tengen
here. Tengen version of Tetris was the
P-cross.
Way superior version to the Nintendo one, but Nintendo shut it down because they had the exclusive rights to it. But you can never find, well, of course you can find it on emulation probably, but man, check it out, it's so good. I was so disappointed. I played that one first and then I played the NES or the Nintendo official Nintendo one.
This year I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals, so I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN is going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices, because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm with Tetris. I'm a little bit like Brian with his Super Mario Brothers collection, where I have all these different versions that I've assembled over the years, and I have Tetris 64, which was also called Bio Tetris, where you put a little clip on your ear and it measures your heartbeat and speeds up the gameplay if you get too excited.
I don't want all this.
No.
Why
do people want to be stressed out when they play video games?
Okay, there are 2 modes. The other one is if your heartbeat goes too high, your pulse goes too high, it slows it down. So there's the agitate you mode and the calm you mode. And then there's Tetris and Bombless on the Super NES, which I think it came out with the as part of the Super NES collection, right? On Switch too. Uh-huh. Was it at least in Japan? But I've got so many Tetris games.
Do you have? They showed that like the heartbeat sensor thing at like E3 a couple years ago.
The vitality sensor.
Yeah.
No, they showed that off so much. It was all over the place for a while. They were very serious about it, and then.
That was the sequel. That never came out. This is the original vitality sensor for the N64, which plugged into the. Did it go into the cartridge? The memory card slot on the controller, I think. And then you clip it on your ear, and it's really strong. It hurts, man. So like, it's this little gray evil biter.
You wired your ear to your N64.
It's just an alligator clip.
Yeah.
So you plug your brain into your Nintendo Switch.
Into a wall outlet.
I got to dig it up. It's really funny. It does have teeth. And you're like, no.
This is so, I mean, I believe you, 100% believe you. But if this was an elaborate lie, then that'd be very well done.
It's not a lie, but it might not have teeth.
Now you're making me want to dig up a Super Scope 6 so I could play that version of Tetris. No one else remembers that one? It was one of 6 games released for the Super Scope 6 on the original cartridge.
I did get that cartridge.
Yeah. Man, my brother, he had to have the Super Scope 6. Oh my God. I got to have the Super Scope 6, he would say every day before Christmas. And then he got it. We're like, Super Scope 6? Hell yeah. And we played it for like 2 days.
My first console was a GameCube.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. Well, you know what? You have a long life ahead of you. That's good news.
I just upset everybody by saying that.
Well, it was just like one of those. It was one of those things where I just immediately just got like back problems and, just like hunched down a little more. And I was just like, one more hair fell out. Per, I found a picture of this thing.
Yep.
And it straight up looks like something from a hospital. It looks like one of the least fun. It's entirely gray. And
This one's in Japanese, and it's just a little. It looks like something they clip onto somebody when they're in a hospital bed.
That's right, like so. little toe clip thingy or finger
for best
clip
results, thing. You have to put that jelly that they put on.
I mean, with a more serious response, I wonder if that there's like a through line from that kind of thing to what the Ring Fit is now and what the Joy-Cons can
absolutely.
Do, right? Because I played a lot of Ring Fit, and it's got after every exercise, you put your thumb over it and it tells you your heart rate and how many calories you burned and all these other things. And it's, I mean, they're
the through
using,
line is that
they're using that tech. Nuts. They're just not injuring. They're not injuring you with teeth anymore.
That's right.
Until Ring Fit 2, which has spikes, is on fire.
It's definitely coming. There'll be a Ring Fit 2.
I feel like Ring Fit
10 million sold, man.
It's such a huge hit, but outside of like work, I don't know anybody who has it, which is so weird.
That's you don't know all the fit people.
Oh, also yeah. I don't know anybody outside of work.
That would do it, Seth. Yeah.
Only 4 copies of the game sold in Maine.
Is that true?
Wow. That is true.
I got the numbers in. Yes.
Yep. Did you have the?
That's called yes and improv, folks. Mm-hmm.
Don't taunt me with numbers.
Oh, that's right. Reb is on. Let's not talk numbers.
Well, we won't talk numbers. We'll talk Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, which is coming in 2022. Oh no, I messed up and I said a number. I'm sorry. This is a Switch exclusive. Well, a timed Switch exclusive. I don't know if anybody else watched the trailer for this, but this is Jet Set Radio, but instead of rollerblades, it's skateboards. And I mean, like, if you told me this was just a new Jet Set Radio game, I would 1,000,000% believe you. There's no fooling here.
Seth, they're clearly telling you that it is one.
Yeah.
They even got the composer. Was it Hideki Naganuma from Jet Set or Jet
Set? Okay. Yes. Yeah. But from the title alone,
everything
before
is
I
the
looked
same.
At the game, it's yeah. I just was like Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. What is that? That doesn't sound.
It's the
like
exact
fun at
same
all.
Amount of syllables. Like,
yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, like this is they're getting into that part of your brain mm-hmm. that goes. But this is one of those things that's just sort of like, well, no one's. You know, like the original band stopped recording, so the cover band is touring, basically. Like,
oh,
I'm
yeah.
fine with that.
So you're,
you know?
You mean like Toys in the Attic, New England's premier Aerosmith cover band?
That's exactly what I was thinking of, specifically that reference that only you understand. I was there too. You got
hey, look, there's like 3 people who know me in Maine, so they
all
they appreciate
Ring Fit.
They all.
But it's exactly. Don't you think it's weird? Don't you think it's weird that they didn't change a little bit more about it, right? Like if you get they're Advance Wars clones. They're Advance Wars clones and they change the characters or they create a medieval setting or something. But mm-hmm. like this is just Jet Grind.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
everything.
Fine. I feel like in the last 5 or 6 years, there's been a lot of love for the Jet Set vibe
yes.
from the indie community, but nothing quite this explicit, but like games that are implementing skate. There's a lot more skateboarding game things with like, or like with punk, like color aesthetics yeah. or this kind of art style or that kind of music or, you know, running around. I don't know. Just things that like borrow things from Jet Set where you're describing the game and it's like X, Y, Z in Jet Set. But yeah. I don't know. I think it's like not surprising that we finally got a game that is just more Jet Set because people clearly have a lot of love for that game. I see it come up when people are talking about soundtracks that they love a lot. And yeah, it's very loved.
I haven't played it since it came out and I still like it. The music is still in my head. Like you just go beam, 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 beat up. You know, like it just comes back when you see the visuals.
We can actually exclusively reveal that Pear is doing the entire soundtrack for this game. Yeah. And he will be beatboxing and mouthing all of the songs. So if you like that last 30 seconds, get ready. Cause that, and he's dancing
hours.
Too.
I actually never played the Jet Radio games when they were on Dreamcast. But I did make it to the world within when it came to PC, like many, many years later. And I was like, man, I'm an idiot for never having picked this up sooner. Mm-hmm. I know my brother is like obsessed with it, so he's going to be very excited. So great job, Adam.
They weren't really mega hits, so, you know, a lot of people didn't play them.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing is like they're so beloved, but they didn't, you know, exactly set the world of sales on fire, mm-hmm. which is a bummer. But who knows? Maybe Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. Well, it's an indie game. It'll do all right for an indie game, especially one that's
do well.
It's on Nintendo Switch. It's got Jet Set Radio vibes. People love that. Next game I'm very excited about. This is one of the ones that I'm most excited about. And I'm going to tell you why. Because on this very program, on this show, not this episode, but on this program, Nintendo Voice Chat, many months ago when this game was in the zeitgeist, which I know I pronounced properly. I lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah. I said, you know what's a fun game? Loop Hero. I hope that comes to the Nintendo Switch. And by God, Nintendo dreams really do come true. This game is this game just owned my life for like 3 weeks when it first came out. It's all I did. As soon as like work got off, I just played this game. I love Loop Hero. And I fell off of it because I can't play it in bed. And that's a critical part of gaming for me, is to be able to play right before I fall asleep. Well, guess what, friends and friendos? Dreams really do come true. You just have to wait. So Loop Hero is coming out.
Well, somebody told me when this came out. So I've played this. I love Loop Hero. Somebody told me when this first came out, oh, it's a great game to have on like your second monitor while you're working on something. So yes. I thought, oh, great. Well, so I thought great, and I downloaded it, and I think I was working on like some other like unrelated podcast stuff one evening or something, doing some research or something, and I was trying to get that done, and I turned on Loop Hero. And it is not a good game to have on in your second monitor because it devours you. Like I have to micromanage my little man or woman or person, my little friend, my little hero doing loops. I can't not micromanage my Loop Hero. I have to sit there and pause the game every couple of pause mechanic and position things and like make sure everything's okay and make sure I'm not going to die on this loop. It sucked me in for like hours this evening. I was doing this and I'm like, no, okay, I'm just going to play this game. I'm not going to try to use it as a second monitor thing that I have running in the background. It doesn't work. It's very good. It's very, it sucked you. I didn't finish it, but it was very, very addictive.
Yeah. I also did not finish it. I don't know what happened. I just fell off completely. Mm-hmm. It was all I could think about for a couple three weeks, and then I sort of forgot to play it again, but now it's on. I mean, it's going to consume my life on a Nintendo Switch. It's the perfect Nintendo Switch game. It's got this great sort of like Amiga PC sort of style, like old school Windows when you had to boot from DOS. It has that sort of vibe to it. The music is great. The mechanics are great. There's a real like heavy risk reward sort of balance that you have to figure out as you're playing. Like one time I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going one more loop, baby. I'm so powerful right now. And I died and I lost everything. I think you lose like 50%.
That's the trap.
Yeah.
That's the trap.
It's like, son of a gun. It's a family show. I won't say what I really said. But Brian, did you play Loop Hero at all? Did you get sucked in by all the fun?
No, not yet. I was I was kind of watching this from afar and sort of quietly, you know, finger crossing for a console port. And now I'm all in. This is that I'm totally with you. This is the kind of game I want to play on Switch. You know, like I have a gaming PC. This is not really, you know, going to make the most of it. But, you know, this is, you don't really need a high end graphics card for this. But this is like one of those games that is sort of ubiquitous with Switch for me. Like I see a game like this and I'm like, yep, that's where I'm playing it.
Yep.
That's where I was when it came out. I looked at it and said, first of all, it looks like a game my kids would play, which would, like, it's usually the games that annoy me through repetition and, like you said, losing everything.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have that much time. And then I thought, you know what? It's going to come to Switch. So let's try it then.
Well, here we go. It is coming out this winter, according to our news report, or the summer if you live in Australia.
Oh, yep.
So I don't know what that means. November, maybe this is their big holiday release. I'll be excited. Following up on Loop here, we have Eastward, which I didn't know anything about until I was putting this show together. And then I was like, oh, here's another great game. It's from Chucklefish, who you might know from Wargroove, Starbound, and probably their best well-known game is Stardew Valley. It's an action RPG set in a post-apocalyptic world. Got puzzle and dungeon elements. I'm all in on this. It looks like a really cool, like if Chucklefish was given the keys to the Mana franchise, basically.
Yeah.
Very like adorable pixel style. It's very Chucklefishy, which is a term I just coined. 16th of September, so just over a month. It's going to be a timed console exclusive for Nintendo Switch, or you can buy it on Steam. Don't buy it on Steam. Buy it on Nintendo Switch. Look at this beautiful.
I love the world. I love the, it's like this, it looks like Mana, but then it's got like trains and modern buildings and stuff. It's a really cool style, kind of a 16-bit style that we haven't seen.
Yeah.
It's got the character designs are kind of like earthboundy, not in visual style. Well, how to describe this? In mannerism, if that makes sense. Mm. Whenever I see them, I think that's like a weird, goofy adult out of Earthbound or something, which I like.
Yeah, they're kind of weird look, right?
Yeah, just sort of goofy and lopsided in a funny way. That's nice. Mm-hmm. So it's Chucklefish is publishing it. I think it's a debut game by this studio called Pixpill. Chucklefish has a really good portfolio. I mean, they developed and published Starbound, which is one of my absolute
super
favorite
good
games.
Love Starbound.
Wargroove was really good. They obviously published Stardew Valley, I believe, on mobile and maybe something else. But they have a good lineup, and they do tend to publish this kind of pixel pretty style of thing that is usually very charming.
This looks great.
I'm probably, as I do often during these shows, just going to order this as soon as we're as soon as we wrap recording. So, yeah, Brian, what do you think?
I'm in.
Down? Yeah.
Yeah. I got it confused for a second with a game called East Shade, which I don't know if any of you have
heard. That was my game of the year for 2019.
No way. Yeah. I would love to see that come to Switch, by the way, not to distract everybody from this game, but East Shade
is
basically
wonderful. Please play it.
Yeah, it's like animal head paint, Renaissance painter Skyrim.
When you put it like that,
yeah, it's like
about exploring this island, and you're a painter, and you just paint these beautiful landscapes and wander around. And there's like some light puzzle solving, interaction questing, but it's just very much it's about being in a place and falling in love with the place. That game is really personal to me, actually. I love East Shade. Don't let me talk about East Shade. I'll talk the whole podcast about it. Yeah, it's not on Switch.
This is not that, but that's cool. So go check that out. But this looks cool too.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this one. I'm also excited for Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon, which is a puzzle adventure mashup. I mean, it's Shovel Knight. So remember Shovel Knight? All the kids love Shovel Knight. I love Shovel Knight. Coming out.
Did you all see that Yacht Club recently put together like a wiki of all of the times Shovel Knight has appeared in other games? And it's just crazy. Like,
I did not see that.
Yeah, it's like, and it's one of those things where he has popped up in so many different games over the last few years that you've probably lost track.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's like dozens of dozens plus like an Arby's kids meal. Like, seriously, like it's
really,
he goes places. So,
yeah.
The Shovel Knight games, the original Shovel Knight game, and then the other games that Yacht Club made around it. So like the one with King Knight and Plague Knight and the Scythe Man. I love those. They're really, really good. And this particular one is not for me, but I think it is really cool that Shovel Knight, this little like indie character from this little studio that was just making a cool platformer, has become beloved enough that they can do these spinoffs or have other people do these spinoffs or put him in other games, and people are very excited about that. That is super dope.
Yeah, this is definitely for me. I love dumb match color and chain reaction puzzle games. You know, I've talked at length about Tetris and Puyo Tetris, which is still think the best puzzle game on the Switch. I'm definitely gonna play this. It doesn't even matter that puzzle that he's in it. But I can also use my amiibo on this one.
That is true. To summon a fairy friend, familiar fairy friend, I think is what the press release said specifically.
Related side note, Per, but you know, we've been working from home for like 18 months now, and you used to have a gigantic amiibo collection mounted on the walls of our San Francisco office. And I noticed recently that you have now put those in your own personal house that you live in with your family. So congrats. Pulling that off. I'm sure that was a conversation.
it's up in my the office room that I usually use. It doesn't have a wired internet connection. That's why I'm down here. But I had them in boxes from the office, and then new ones arrived. New ones were released since we've been, you know, away from the office for like 14 years now.
Yeah.
So finally,
I got
the
GameCube.
Since I got my GameCube.
Right? Right after I finished Skyward Sword, the damn bird arrived, and then I was like, "Okay, I gotta put him on the shelf now." And you know, there was a Kickstarter for an amiibo book as well, like a small kind of pocket guide. Yeah, look that up. Cool. It's really neat too. And so, I kind of got this panic that I'm like, "Wait, did I get this old Monster Hunter Stories 2 amiibo?" And then I had to rifle through him. Of course, I have them all. I'm good.
Of course,
who's got this, Brian? You've got whatever's going on behind you. Yeah. Seth, I can't see your background right now, but I know you've got like an arcade cabinet back there somewhere. And then I'm just over here with like under my TV, hidden behind these sliding doors, I've got like six amiibos that I really like. That I got because I just was really into the character or because they had like a functionality in a game that I really wanted.
You know what? You have self-control.
That's what you have. Lots of it.
Oh, that's a Waluigi. I will not order a Waluigi amiibo after this podcast. I will not do it.
I always think about that scene in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, like the original movie, where like the math teacher is trying to explain, like, you know, getting different golden tickets and candy bars. And one character's like, "Oh, say you bought like 200 chocolate bars," and they ask Charlie, they're like, "How many did you buy?" And he's like, "One." Like, that's what that feels like. There are some people that were able to just go, "Well, why would I buy all these characters that I don't like? I should just buy the ones I do like." And then people like me and Pear were like, "Let's get all of them." And then I stopped. And then
yeah, I did not.
Buying. Okay, but I obviously didn't stop buying junk. So,
but yeah, you know what? If I want to retire, some of them go for like 50 to 150 bucks now. Yeah. So I'll be able to live off that for
two or three days in the Bay Area.
I've been talking about this to everybody who has to suffer listening to me, but like video game prices and video game collectible prices are out of control on eBay. Right? Like I sold my Hylian Shield 2DS XL last year, the GameStop exclusive one. I sold it for $350 and I was like, "Haha, look at me."
Why?
It's going for $700 now.
Well,
and it's because people like Gary V are on TikTok being like, "Video games are an investment. I'm telling everybody, find video games to sell them. It's going to hedge against inflation." And so people are just freaking out like, "I'll give you all my money for a video game." So if you have like a bunch of junk that you want to get rid of and you want to make some money, now's the time. I'm going to buy a new Nikon mirrorless camera. Proceeds from junk that I just don't. A bunch of DS games that I bought at GameStop for $3.99 are worth.
You know, I bought some when Nintendo discounted the Labo kits to like just a couple of bucks. Remember that? Like you could get them at Target $14 or something.
$14.99 for the robot.
I bought some extras, and like it's because I have back when I was a kid, there were these really cool playsets. There's Starbird was this Milton Bradley air, spaceship that made noises, and you could go pew 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 with it. You had to go fly around with it.
Can I get those sounds again there?
They built a giant star base out of cardboard, and like that cardboard is worth like its weight in gold now. So that's why I think Labo, because it doesn't last and people put it together, eventually will be worth a lot. I only have to wait 60 years.
Some people are buying up like Bitcoin or like other things like that, and you're purchasing cardboard as your investment.
That's right.
There.
That's my wife does not like it.
Yeah. I mean, I joked about the $3.99 DS, but I specifically bought those games knowing that they would become valuable, most of them. And I'm like, why didn't I just like take, I don't know, 2 weeks to learn about finance and stocks?
Y'all just buy video games and play them. This is very silly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I played most of them for a minute.
I can't make fun of you because I have here on my desk a stress ball that is shaped like a peach from Animal Crossing, which
$89 on eBay right now.
Also smells like a peach.
Oh.
Yeah.
There
weird.
You go. That adds to the value, actually. When it loses the peach smell, nobody wants it anymore. Hey, you guys want to talk about Metal Slug?
Sure.
I think we're good. I think we should just keep talking about it.
Whatever this is.
We're making our way through the indies here. Metal Slug Tactics, hell yes. When this got announced at E3, I was like, oh, hell yeah, I want this. Oh, it's only on PC. I hope it comes to Switch, and now it's coming to Switch. So this is a tactics game. This isn't your traditional Metal Slug, which I think all the actual Metal Slug games are available on Nintendo Switch through that arcade.
Except for the other Neo Geo Pocket.
Not those ones. Just the Neo Geo ones and the later ones. Yep. But some of the best pixel art, maybe the best pixel art of any game.
of all
time. By the way, Bitmap Books has a Metal Slug art book that is, I don't know if you're familiar with Bitmap Books at all, but every book that they put out is amazing.
Yep.
And if you like Metal Slug, I highly recommend checking that one out. But yeah, I'm pretty stoked for this one. Who's with me?
I am with you. And Kat interviewed the developer and talked a little bit about it on NVC last time, even though it hadn't been announced for Switch yet. And that's because she's smart and knew it was going to eventually be announced and come. And like, yeah, it's look, this is bringing back a genre that for many years was overlooked, you know, the kind of isometrics, Tactics Ogre, Final Fantasy Tactics style setup. And this one mixes in the kind of into the Breach type elements. I'm all in. This looks great.
Yeah, I'm extraordinarily excited. This one comes out, well, I don't know. I didn't write that down in my notes. So please.
No, it's like TBA. It's next year sometime, it sounds like. Yeah. And Brett, there's a Steam. It was announced for Steam first, so now
Steam, for other platforms. I'm just kidding. I like PC gaming, right. But Reb, do you have any connection with the Metal Slug franchise?
No, I don't. This is somewhat silly. I mean, this looks great. Like I could watch these little pixel dudes dance all day. You backloaded this segment with all the games that I'm really excited about are at the end. Right after this, I'm going to go off.
I'm just going to hand the hosting duties over because I get stressed out when I start to get this far. No. I'm just kidding. Really excited for this. I love one of my favorite things about the Metal Slug game is there's like one point where you turn into a zombie and then your weapon becomes your like puking zombie blood, and that's just you don't expect to see that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
But my favorite thing are the ridiculously ginormous tanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vehicles are great.
Right.
It's like even the wheels have like cannons on them. Yeah.
you so rescue good. A lot of like kind of POWs, and they all, most of them look like the Big Lebowski. It's a fun time.
They'll give you like a gift.
Hate Street didgeridoo guys. Like it's you'll love it. I love those games. I think they're some of the most fun sort of run and gun, you know, arcade games of all time. I'm cautiously optimistic about playing this game because this is obviously a departure genre wise, but it just looks so good.
Yeah.
Like just recently Konami launched a Contra game for iOS and it's like not what I want, right? Oh. Like it's just not, don't worry about it. Don't even look it up.
Okay.
It's, I mean, maybe you're enjoying it out there, but it's just like one of those, like it's kind of riddled with, you know, MTX stuff and it's like not pixel art. And this is like, this is tried and true to what I think the sort of the original vision of these games is.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. While trying a new genre. So I'm down. I support it and I'm definitely going to play it.
Awesome. Now, Rebecca.
Yes, hello.
Help guide us through this gauntlet of specific Rebecca games. Boyfriend Dungeon.
Yeah, so you've got Boyfriend Dungeon on here, which I have been crossing paths with Boyfriend. There are multiple games in this list coming up here that I've crossed paths with multiple times at various PAXs before events ended. And Boyfriend Dungeon is wonderful. It is from Kit Fox. I haven't gotten to play the final release of it yet, but I've played demos multiple times at events in the past. It is a combination dungeon crawler and like visual novel dating sim, where you, as you're going through this dungeon, you encounter these weapons, swords, rapier, things like that, and they transform into people you can date. You're literally dating your weapons. So there's a very and they're all hot. Every single one of them is hot. There's also
hunky,
a cat.
Oh my God, look at a hunky.
There you go. Look. Look at
that hunky boy.
Very attractive. My goodness. And then there's also a cat who is like one of the dateable. I'm pretty sure dating the cat is a different experience.
The dialogue.
Yeah.
Is-
but it's very, it's very nice. Every encounter I've had with it has been very, very fun. The reviews for it seem to be very, very good. Gosh, look at these people. Oh my goodness. Love that. I really enjoy, I like visual novels a lot, but I find it, just as a personal thing, I find it difficult to sit and read for long periods of time if I'm staring at a screen.
Reading
books. But I love reading books. It's like the other thing I do besides play video games and cook is read books. But I have trouble reading from screens, and visual novels tend to require a lot of sitting and reading. And so I really liked that this was broken up with dungeon crawling because, you know, I'm able to do like some swishy, swashy, sword to slashy combat.
Swashbuckling.
I don't know what I'm trying to say. You know, and do a little bit of exploration, treasure, you know, and but also build a relationship with, oh, look at her. Oh, Valeria the Dagger. Yes. But yes, it's all very, very good. It looks like a lot of fun.
So this is wildly uncharacteristic of me, but I played about an hour and a half of this game last night because it's also on Game Pass, and the dungeons and the combat are super fun. And I'm mm-hmm. with you in the sort of visual novel aesthetic isn't like, you know, it isn't my, when I sit down to play a video game, like I'd rather, you know, sort of like get into combat and action, platforming, all that fun stuff. I don't mind cutscenes and stories and stuff like that, but a lot of the sort of like the VN stuff doesn't really, you know, excite me. But this is really well done, and a lot of the dialogue options are really funny because, like, you have, there's a lot of just like hunky, sexy men just hitting on you, and you can just be like, "No, thank you, sir," repeatedly, and they just keep being like, "What's wrong with me? I'm the perfect specimen," and you're like, "No, you're not. I want to go fight people with your soul sword or whatever." So yeah, it's a good time. If you're one of those people that has Game Pass and you want to sort of test it out before you buy it on Switch, you have that option. But yeah, go check it out.
I'm just like captivated by this video. I like every time I see Sawyer the Glaiven.
I will say my one gripe with this game is that they're like repeatedly after you complete an action, instead of like a cutscene or like a loading screen or something like that, it does this like weird, like, you know, 90s cartoon thing where it just shows you the logo of the game. It just comes in and out. So it'll just constantly be like boyfriend dungeon. And it just pops away and it goes back in. And then you're like, you run up in a hallway and it goes like boyfriend dungeon. And you're like, oh, okay. Good branding, but I get it.
Well, it's not a game about putting your boyfriend in a dungeon. So I'm not that interested.
Also, contrary to the name, boyfriends and girlfriends to date. And I believe non-binary options and a cat. So plenty of options
partner dungeon.
Whoever you would like to spend your time with.
The character creator is like, it, you know, incredibly, it's simple and also robust in terms of options. And you have a mirror in your sort of home bedroom area that you can go look at and change your character at any time. So enjoy.
Cool. Yeah. Very cool. Meet your friends in the dungeon. Rebecca, Garden Story. What's up with that?
Garden Story. Super cute. Another game that I played at multiple PAXs or similar in the past. It is a little top-down, it's been a little bit, so my memory might be fuzzy, but it's a little top-down adventure. You play as this little grape named Concord, who arrives in this, yeah, look at him, he arrives in this little community of little fruit, food, animal kinds of friends, this little peaceful community, and the community's struggling a little bit, it's got some problems, and you, the hero at grape Concord, need to go solve them, clean up the community, and basically make it inhabitable and pleasant for people again. So it involves a lot of things. It involves some exploration. You can like find materials and craft them into things and build things. It's a little bit of dungeon crawling, kind of Zelda-like elements at different points involved there. So a little bit of fighting. But yeah, just this cute little pleasant thing, really sweet dialogue. Little guy. Sorry, we're watching the trailer. This is not good radio. He's just real cute. He's got the little beady eyes. I love anything with little beady eyes. That is actually, I'm really excited to play this. This is like the next thing. It's out now. This is the next thing that I want to play. Like, I just finished Death. I can't talk about it here because it was on like Xbox and PC, but I just finished Death's Door last night. And so this is next up for me. I'm really excited for Garden Story.
Death's Door is so good. Yeah.
We talked about Earthbound earlier, but like the visual style looks a lot like Earthbound, right?
This is very Earthbound.
Yeah. I don't know if any of you have played, let me get this right, Turnip Boy Commits Tax Evasion.
I've heard about that.
I've seen it pop up.
Yeah, the art style reminds me a lot of that. Super awesome game too.
That one's on Switch.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's too many games. I can't keep up.
That is a frequent problem.
It's hard.
Look, it's made by Picogram. Is that how it's pronounced?
Yes, Picogram. Yes.
Oh, I'm being mocked.
Okay,
will not stand for this. I am the host. I demand respect, no matter how I mispronounce. Very easy to pronounce words. Necro barista, or is it necro barista?
It's definitely necro barista.
Come on.
This one I might have to toss back to you. And I know a little bit about necro barista, serving coffee house where the dead can show up, something like that.
I was joking. I'm sorry, but my feelings are hurt because I said that because I thought that's how you actually said the word necro.
No, necro, like death. I've heard a lot of really good things about Necro Barista. It's something that I want to play, but I haven't gotten around to yet.
It's about coffee and it's about death, and I'm into both of those things.
Is it like it's like a coffee house where the dead can show up or something? You
cool.
Serve them coffee. I this is me guessing. I don't remember. Someone told me this once.
That's me before my first cup of Joe in the morning. If you know.
You sound like you're doing book reports based on the title of. Like, I didn't read the book, but.
I'm sorry to the Necrobarista people. I want to play this.
No, to be fair, it's one of those games where even when you watch the trailer for it, you're like, yeah, I'm not sure how that's going to be, right? Like, yeah.
People say it's good. People say it's very good.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel like this is just mock. Toem.
I'll take it back from you, Seth, because Toem is a game about taking pictures.
Yeah.
It is.
That's the black and white one, right?
Yeah, it's this little black and white game. You play this little person going around this island taking pictures. A little top-down thing. Looks like some puzzle solving involved by taking pictures of certain things. You're apparently searching for the legend of Toem, the legendary Toem, trying to take a picture of a Toem, a picture.
Oh.
But yeah, it's a little photography game. This is a good year for photography games. A lot of that going on. New Pokemon Snap, Umurangi Generation was last year or into this year.
Yeah, it's a rewarding hobby.
A bunch of indies in E3 had photography too. There was like Beasts of Maravilla Island and something else, but yeah.
This game, the style of it immediately reminded me of like if somebody made Kingdom of Loathing in 3D. Just because it's got sort of a black and white hand drawn style. It's a little bit more detailed than Kingdom of Loathing.
Very stylish.
Yeah.
It's very stylish.
Got a good look.
Yeah. I'm kind of interested in this one.
Yeah.
We have the follow up to Far Loan Sales with Far Changing Tides.
I good love
pronunciation.
The first game. I did not play that.
Oh, man. It's super chill. I really, really dig up the first game on Switch if you're listening and you want sort of just like a sort of like chill boat ride experience. It's you're this little character and you're piloting this sort of mechy ship shaped thing that just repeatedly breaks down and needs a little bit of work.
So it's not really in ship shape.
Yeah,
there's a little like, X in the corner of your window. You just click on it and then it'll just. <you'll>, I don't know where I'm going anymore, but
I'm sorry.
I got shipwrecked by stuff. But yeah, it's really cool. Like it's sort of like you do very minor maintenance to your very large vehicle as you move along. You bump into various obstacles, clear them out of the road, and then keep going. And then you get new parts for your ship and stuff like that. And you're basically just moving from left to right. It's slow. It's not really action packed, but it is like, it's a really good game to play while you're like, sort of like, watching one of your favorite shows, like some comfort food, listening to a podcast, like NBC, you know, one of the best podcasts ever
absolutely.
Made.
Yes.
Any of those things. Like if you're listening to the number one video game podcast ever made, Nintendo Voice Chat, it's a good game to go with that. The best show ever.
I think maybe Toem had, Brian, I think Toem had recommended the original to us and then we all played it. Yeah, it's a really unique game, like where it's just the progression is from left to right. And then, you know, you can get out of your ship and grab things and do this resource management stuff. It's really neat, very unique game, very like just really relaxing. It's like a game you can play while watching TV too.
It's very sort of minimalist and stripped down, and I love the sort of scale here of you're just this funny little character who's kind of helpless but can, you know, kind of pull their own weight, and then this massive gargantuan weird looking ship, and I guess you can go more underwater and do swimming stuff this time around. And I love the art direction in like the backgrounds and the towns and the city here. Like it's just this is again one of those games that I probably wouldn't have paid attention to, and it came to Switch and I was like, this is great, I love it. So check it out,
looks really nice.
Yeah, this was not on my radar at all, but now hearing you talk about it and then watching, you know, the trailer for it, I'm like, oh, this looks like the lo-fi hip hop beats to chill and study to the game. So
I think you'd really dig it.
I'm going to have to check this one out for sure. Last, but probably not least, The Islanders, which is a console edition out today. Rebecca perks right up, excited, hand raised.
Yes, hello.
Please explain to us Islanders.
Yes, I played Islanders on PC when it first came out. Not normally one for city builder games. Usually like way too complicated for me to wrap my brain around. I just don't feel like it. This is so relaxing. This is a city builder for people who like the idea of city builders, but just one of the lo-fi beats to chill to. Very, very good vibes. It is, you get a procedurally generated little island And you start off with limited amounts of buildings that you can place. And there are like certain objectives to how you want to place them to, you know, accumulate the things you need to accumulate. And at different points, you will get branching paths where you pick one type of building or the other. And that kind of trends your island along certain themes that you will then follow to completion. And it's just very, once you finish a certain island's objective, you can either move on to the next one or you can hang out and build a few more buildings to get more points if you feel like it, but up to you. And you move on to bigger and bigger islands, and it continues until you eventually run out of space and run out of your ability to do objectives. But it's very relaxing. It's very chill. There's not a bunch of complicated bits. There's not like 20 different kinds of resources or a bunch of quests that you have to complete or other things. It's just very nice music and very pleasant looking buildings, and you just kind of keep making nice. It's for people who like to organize things and just want to sit there and put things in neat little spots. It feels good.
I really dig this because I like the idea of this genre, but I'm also kind of a town simpleton, no pun intended, when it comes to like world building or city building games.
Yeah.
And so like when you kind of pare them down a little bit, that excites me. Like I actually really like, there was a game called Doshin the Giant. Para, you probably know about it, right? Yep. Yeah. Miyamoto worked on it, and it never came to America, although it came to other regions. It was a GameCube game, Reb's first console. And it reminded me of that in that it's like, it's very simple and there aren't really like a ton of overwhelming options, but you get that sort of like world building, city building aesthetic and feel from it. So yeah, I'm in on this.
Yeah, I used to play a lot of city builders, you know, like classic SimCity, and then City Skylines was really neat. Mm. And when I watched it, when I saw this trailer, I didn't realize that it was so simple. I was because it was such a short little introduction, I thought there would be more resource management. So it's a little bit more mobile style. Yeah, more like like just basically filling space. You don't have to worry about power grids and anything like that.
Yeah, there are some things. Obviously, it's not just slapping down buildings wherever. There are some buildings where you get more points if you put them next to other buildings, or you know, if you put one thing close, you can't put buildings close to other buildings, or people get mad, so it won't let you do it. There are organizational elements to it. It's not just throw anything wherever, but you're basically trying to get the highest score possible as you're playing. And so, but that's the end all be all. Basically, is try to get big number, and there's not a whole lot, aside from what you have in your hand to work with, there's not a whole lot limiting you from doing that.
That's great.
Right.
I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I think, I mean, I love city building and I love this aesthetic. And, you know, I was pretty obsessed with A-Train there for a little while.
I remember this.
Might get back into that. There's a new controller out. It's in Japan only. I have to import it. But yeah, I'm going to have to check that out. We did it. We made it through the indies. It only took almost the entire show. We can get to topic two and topic three extremely quickly because we're almost out of time. That's all right. Axiom Verge 2 is out. We gave it a 7. If you forgot, because I mentioned that so long ago at the beginning of the show, it is a Metroidvania. Back in March, we updated our list of the 10 best Metroidvanias with one condition. Actually, I guess two conditions. The game couldn't be a Metroid and it couldn't be a Castlevania. So that's why it wasn't obviously like, you know, Super Metroid and Symphony of the Night. So in order from 10, number 10, Shadow Complex, number 9, Blasphemous, 8, Yoku's Island Express, 7, Cave Story, 6, the original Axiom Verge, 5, SteamWorld Dig 2, 4, Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, 3, Guacamelee 2, number 2, Ori and the Will of the Wisps. And Tom is not here, but he'd be very happy with Hollow Knight coming in at our top Metroidvania list. Pear agrees with that.
Yeah.
Let it be like, I think the notable thing is 9 out of the top 10 Metroidvanias chosen by our team of all time on the Switch.
Oh, wow. Right?
The only one, Shadow Complex, was an Xbox game, obviously. I love that game too. It was like a more high tech take on Metroid side scrolling. Great game. Love it.
I fought for the inclusion of that game. Everybody else wanted to say no.
I love that game, man. I'm glad you did. But yeah, the look, 9 awesome Metroidvanias on the Switch.
Yeah. And my question is to you, the panel, what is your favorite Metroidvania that isn't necessarily represented by this list? And it can be Symphony of the Night or Super Metroid if you want it to be.
Oh, my favorite that is, I mean, man, I'll let you all go.
I want to say my favorite, and I was thinking, because I wrote this question, so I obviously had the time to think about it, but it doesn't quite fit the criteria, but I always felt like Faxanadu
or the NES has like a Metroid-like sort of elements to it, and I always loved that game. Like, I've loved it since the first time I rented it, even though I wasn't very good at it. But when I finally, when it finally clicked to me, I feel like that game doesn't get the credit maybe that it deserves. It's not great, but it's really interesting, especially for an NES game. It's got like RPG elements, and you do build up your character as you go through the Tree of Life. It has a really cool final boss, and it has one of the best end screens of any NES game. You're walking away from the Tree of Life, and everything's alive again, and everything's happy. And that was the dude, okay. Somebody actually got really mad because I spoiled something from like 15 years ago. Like, come on, man. So yeah, I just spoiled Faxanadu. Sorry, but that's my answer.
Seth, this list doesn't include the 3D takes on it, right? It was limited to kind of like the classic style, so you don't get the Arkham series in here. Like even the modern Tomb Raider games are obviously Metroidvania and set up, and like how you use items to unlock new areas. So excluding those from that list, I would definitely pick SteamWorld Dig 2. In the end, my favorite Metroidvania is Metroid games, you know, whether it's the Metroid Prime games or Super Metroid or, you know, Zero Mission. But like SteamWorld Dig 2 on that list is the one that did it for me.
Yeah, that's up there for me. I also really like the Guacamelee games. I really like the Ori games. Yeah, the Ori games are awesome. Also, all those games are also on Switch. Per, I'm totally with you on SteamWorld Dig 2. I really, really hope we get a SteamWorld Dig 3 someday. That game is so, so good. I love it so much.
Oh, yes, I got to play it.
We will 100% get a sequel.
I hope so.
You heard it here first.
Hollow Knight at number one, I think, is correct. That is absolutely my favorite Metroidvania. It's so good. I cannot wait for Silksong. I think the thing, I'm very picky about Metroidvanias, and that list is pretty good. I think the one that I would maybe argue with is, this is going to sound bad, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which is a game I loved. Very good game. I think Ori and the Blind Forest should have taken its place. I like both games a lot, and I think Ori and the Will of the Wisps did really cool things as a sequel. It was a good sequel, but I think as just the encapsulation of the essence of a good Metroidvania, Ori and the Blind Forest is a little bit better in terms of how it handles the way you backtrack, the way you explore, the way you move. I liked a lot of things about Will of the Wisps, but I think Blind Forest.
I think I'm with you on that.
Been on the list, honestly, for me instead. Yeah.
I've never heard it put that way, but I think now that I'm hearing that, I think I'm probably with you on that.
Yeah, I like a lot of the stuff they added. I mean, I like the questing, I like the characters, I liked a lot of things about it, but Blind Forest, that there was something in its simplicity that I think was more effective to me when I'm thinking of what in my brain is like the perfect Metroidvania, and Blind Forest is it for me.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, no, I can see it.
The Jinso Tree Escape is just like one of my favorite sequences in all of gaming. It is so good.
Also, shout out to Blasphemous, which is a really cool game. I feel like a lot of people slept on that game, but that's really awesome.
Yeah, I'm one of those sleepers.
If it's the one I'm thinking of, I saw my partner play a little bit of that, and it looks very, very cool, but I can't play that because I grew up Catholic, and the like actual weird Catholic saint lore is so much weirder than the fictional stuff they put in that game. Oh. And so the whole time I'm just thinking, oh, this reminds me of that one saint who was like grilled to death or whatever and said, turn me Satan over, I'm done on this side or whatever. Like, this, they should just put this in the game.
No, please.
Sorry, family podcast.
Hey, it's good. We were talking about Blasphemy, a good family subject.
Available on Nintendo Switch. Parents help me set it up.
Real quick, this is some news that just broke before we recorded here. Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis is the placeholder text on Kirby's official website now.
So, what?
Nobody knows why.
Did he eat Kafka?
They're basically just using it as the lorem ipsum, right? Like,
right,
the,
yes.
They're clearly updating the website,
yes,
and they just have it. That's just what they put in there. I'm very upset because Joe was asking for headline suggestions for this article, and he didn't take my suggestion, which was Nintendo's official Kirby website woke up this morning to find itself transformed into a monstrous vermin. I can't imagine why he wouldn't want to headline that.
There
long.
You go. Well, look, there's clearly a bug. Maybe a cockroach in here.
It says news article text
goes here and then says, one morning when Gregor Samsa woke from troubled dreams, he found himself transformed in his bed into a horrible vermin. He lay in his armor-like back, and if he lifted his head a little, he could see his brown belly, slightly domed and divided by arches into stiff sections. This is the official Kirby website.
It's so good. The funny thing is, obviously, we all know that Kirby secretly is the ender of worlds.
Yes.
There's a darkness to the pink ball that we just can't fathom. He eats people.
Well, I mean, and to be fair, Kirby's legs are pitifully thin compared to the size of the rest of him.
It looks like, as at the time we are recording this, they have set it up so that news link now redirects back to the regular Kirby homepage, which does not have this on it.
It's weirdly dated January 12th, 2017 as well, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If you're not familiar with Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis, it's about a salesman who wakes up and he's a beetle. There you go. Oh, spoiler.
We've all been there.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the story. That's the first line of the story. He wakes up and he's a bug. And the whole story is about him, a regular dude waking up one morning and for no apparent reason being a bug.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like themes and stuff. You probably read it in English class at some point, but it's great. Like, the opening line is amazing.
Lore wise, like, is Kirby the most powerful character in Nintendo?
Yes.
Like, I feel like he is, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yes. He's the only one in Smash that survives the intro.
Yeah.
You throw him off the cliff and it's like, boop, boop,
just come back up.
Like, there's a lot of characters that you would identify as like historically more powerful, like Ganondorf, right? When he gets all the triangles. Yeah, but Kirby. Like, and people are going to be so mad I said triangles. But Kirby feels like this like unkillable, you know, mutating fluff that can eat anyone and consume their soul and powers. Like, that's big. Mario can do that with his hat a little in the last game, but that's Kirby's whole body.
Yeah, and he's also like very, very simple. The plot of sorry for spoilers of every Kirby game, but the plot of basically every more modern Kirby game is he's like taking a nap or he's trying to eat it. Like the one that I think of is Rainbow Curse, where the opening of the game, the dude just wants to eat an apple. There's an apple and he's trying to eat it. And then some galactic menace shows up and his apple rolls away and he gets mad. And so he has to confront the forces of space, time, color, art, and life itself. And fight them off just so he can get his apple back and eat it. Like, that's the plot of every Kirby game.
You know how bad it would be to be that one tree in that game who just keeps getting beat up by this psychotic, you know, pink bag that comes in and just spits your own fruit at your face? Like, that's just a bad life. Like, I just feel bad for that tree. We don't really talk about that tree a lot.
Yeah, and people think, you know, oh, the Kirby games are easy because you can't die. No, Kirby's too tough. You can't kill him.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, him awakening one morning and finding himself transformed in his bed into a horrible vermin is simultaneously the least Kirby thing possible to happen and the most Kirby thing.
Kirby's the average Kirby has 8 spiders a year crawl into their mouth. So
that's right. The vermin thing is weird because Kirby has historically ridden a like rad hamster thing around before.
Yes.
So
what's the hamster's name? Like Phil or something?
Rad hamster.
That's a real name. Someone's gonna make fun of me for not knowing the hamster's name.
Rick,
thank you. It's a normal Rick. Name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's nobody knows why Metamorphosis was put as the placeholder text, but that's just the way that it is.
Thank you.
I am going to skip over what we've been playing because I already know what everybody's been playing. I'm sorry, but we've all been playing P-Cross, Genesis P-Cross.
Well, I've been taking pictures. Pokemon Snap.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make that joke for like the 20th time. Sorry, Seth.
It's fine. No, it's fine. I mean,
no, you are saying it like Pikachu, I guess, which is
I don't know why I say Pikachu. It like that. There are some things that I only ever read, and I say them out loud in like a meeting, and I'm like, everyone stops it's what they're saying, like doing, and looks at me weird, and I'm like, I don't know how to pronounce that.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my weird things. I can know somebody for years and years and years and have anxiety when I have to say their name. So
no, that's normal. That's normal.
Oh, okay.
If you ever see me use the word impact on social media, like, wow, this impacts us. It's because I once again forgot the difference between effect and off.
That's
little cheat code right there.
The same thing.
Yeah, all the time. I'm just like, whoa,
oh my God, I guess I'm not reading that. I have to think.
I will sometimes write reviews, like written reviews, and then when I switch to the video script, realize that some of the words that I wrote that I used correctly, I don't know how to say out loud, and I want to change them to words that I know how to say out loud. For sure.
As someone that does a lot of VO for IGN reviews, thank you. because I get a lot of scripts from just like, this is gonna be tough.
You, Brian, you always get grief over saying Hyrule, I think.
Oh yeah,
on your and Zelda videos.
I said Zeebs in a recent Metroid video because that's how Jennifer Hale says it in the sort of like the leaked Zebis or Zeebies. Some people were pointing out too, but
they're fine when you call them triangles.
Yeah,
yes,
triangles is good.
That's fine.
Jose used to say Mario, but he was from he's from New York City, so I couldn't help myself.
You can.
That's okay.
This is question block. Alan Primaceri asks, what is the silliest reason you stopped playing a game because of a completely normal feature? He says, for example, I grew on Pokemon Red and Silver, but when Sapphire came out, I hated the sound of the trumpet-like music, so I stopped after the first gym.
What?
I've since grown to like that gen. It's the its music and the remakes, but man, I had that brass sass.
Oh my gosh, I love the trumpets. It's the silliest thing. I love it. That's okay.
I never finished Bravely Second. And it was because that game where you make the like poof balls. It's been a long time since I played. I got so tied up in the side quests stuff. There's like something you have to sew these little balls. It's been a long time.
Bravely Second. Mm-hmm.
Bravely Second.
I was thinking Bravely Default 2. What? Okay.
No. I beat that because I reviewed it. For Bravely Second, I got so like caught up in the side quests that I maxed out all my stats in that completely useless part of the game.
Yeah,
and then
that.
The rest of the game just didn't seem fun anymore and I stopped.
Mm.
So
for me, it was the voice of the sort of anthropomorphic Wii Fit in Wii Fit. Remember that? Where it would be like, measuring. And then it would just tell me I'm overweight eventually. Because I was just like, not only it's an annoying voice, it's going to be followed by an insult. I also dropped off that game because it involved physical activity. But that part was definitely, the worst. Why would I do that in a video game? That part where it was just like repeatedly, and I remember Wii Music, which a game I do not like at all, but I tried to give it a shot because I produce music. And I there's a character, the main character in that game is one of the most annoying voices I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, it's just like, like, it sounds like the bird from Banjo-Kazooie.
Which is great.
Which I think is cute. But in Wii Music, it's just like this like maestro thing.
No, there's awful. Nothing silly about stopping to play Wii Music. That is a complete mess from beginning to end. And by the way, replaying Skyward Sword, there are a couple of like challenges at the pumpkin patch. You gotta play your harp and stuff like that, which are a reminder of how awful it was. And you could tell they're like, we're gonna bring back some of the instrument stuff. And it's like, it sounds like crap. It sounds so horrible, even in Skyward Sword.
Yep.
So bad.
I have a very early memory. So before I owned a console, I did own handhelds. I had a Game Boy and a Game Boy Color and a Game Boy Advance. And on the Game Boy Advance,
welcome to consoles. Back problems, then.
Yeah, thank you. On the Game Boy Advance, there was a Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone game, and it was one of my very first Game Boy Advance games that I had. And I remember very early on in the game. There is a stealth sequence because he sneaks out at night and has to sneak with and it's before you get the invisibility cloak. So I didn't have that yet. And there's a section where you get to sneak around all the prefects. And I started that section and I took a look at it and I had never encountered a stealth section in games before. And the fact that I was like a little kid. The fact that a very stuffy kid. And the fact that these adults, were going to catch me and get me in trouble if I got caught sneaking around the hallways at night made me so anxious, I just never played the game again.
There you go.
I just got a warning in my ear.
You don't have to announce that. The whole point of the secret communication between you and the producer is that it's a secret.
It happens so rarely. Like, I always love to point it out. Like,
I'm getting some word in my ear that we need to begin wrapping up.
What's that? Guys, the producer's doing one of these.
Zach Ryan tweeted this out a couple years ago. We were at E3 and we were coming in hot on a live show segment, and Zach was like, all right, coming up next we have Far Cry 5, so just, you know, just say we have Far Cry 5. So I just go, we have Far Cry 5.
That was fun.
Brilliant.
Other three Paris, minutes are up. Any petty reasons that you gave up on a game?
No, only petty reasons. No, like just petty reasons. Like I stopped playing Ninja Gaiden on the Xbox because the camera showed everything but my character. But other than that, you know,
I hate that game. Not,
yeah,
I hate all that right, game. Well, what, you really? You hate the Ninja Gaiden?
Dude, there's a boss fight fairly early on, I think, where like the camera will not show you the enemy, so the enemy hits you. Like people are going to go like, wow, you're not using the camera right.
That's part of the functionality of that feature of the game. But yeah.
Part of the fun is that ninjas are not always visible, so they surprise you and hit you.
I mean, that is harmful.
Yeah, no, that was my petty reason for that one. And I actually, they're games where I can tolerate frame rate drops and some technical issues like camera glitches. But, you know, once in a while it gets to me and I'm like, I'm out.
Oh, yeah. That kind of is what happened with Hyrule. Age of Calamity with me.
Yep.
I was like really enjoying it. And then it just got to where I wasn't anymore. So, that is all the time we have for Nintendo voice chat. Thanks to Brian, Reb, and Pear for joining me on this madcap ride in the world of Nintendo Indies today. It's always so much fun. I am extremely excited that we made it through without going over or coming way under. So if you would like to submit your own questions for Question Block, write to us at nvc@ign.com or respond to our weekly Question Block post on the Nintendo Voice Chat podcast forums on Facebook. Thank you all for watching. And remember, NVC is the only place where you can
get the thing.
Thank you much.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.